The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, yes, trying to cope with all the news that comes through. It's been a pretty eventful weekend, and I wanted to start with two things that weren't even on our list. First of all, there's the story about Lana Marks that's being carried all over the news about the fact that she is in potentially the crosshairs of Iran. And I'm sure that it's been big news in South Africa as well. Of course, Lana Marks, the ambassador, the U.S. ambassador to South Africa and a friend of Donald Trump's. And apparently the Iranians have been targeting her as some sort of a revenge attack against what the U.S. government did to Soleimani. So that's an interesting story.
What's also fascinating is, of course, South Africa, of all countries, has such a ridiculously warm relationship with Iran that one would have thought, out of loyalty to South Africa alone, this wouldn't have been something that they would have looked at.
The question is whether Iran has loyalty to anybody.
No, we know that they don't, of course. Of course we know that. But the South African government clearly don't.
Yeah, and well, so, you know, unfortunately, this, you know, surrounding her, I mean, she, of course, being a representative of the U.S. government, I guess, will always be somebody who has a certain level of threat directed towards her. But, of course, in her position as a close associate of President Trump and, of course, Jewish to go with it, all of those things apparently have made a very suitable revenge target, according to the Iranians. I was also interested to read that there was security prizes that were awarded to the Mossad spy agency by the Israeli president, Ruvi Rivlin. And this is a prize giving where we've no idea who's receiving the prizes and we've no idea why. But we just know that these are prizes that are being given to people who've done some amazing work for the state of Israel and who have really undertaken things that are beyond the call of duty, and they're being rewarded for that. And that's all we know about this prize giving of these spies and the spy agency, the teams who have been conducting these things. It's a quite a lengthy article. I'm not quite sure what they had to write about because it's all nothing that you can report. It's a crazy story.
Absolutely, absolutely crazy. All right, so let's just let's start off now with the lockdown in Israel. That's been announced. Litzman resigns. Well, I mean, it couldn't happen earlier enough for me. I've never been a fan of his. But that said, what is going on? It's just, wow. You know, when I speak to people in Israel yesterday, the despondency, the frustration, the sheer helplessness of people, given what they're perceiving to be an ineffectual leadership by the Israeli government, it just is so palpable. Give me your sense of what's going on there.
I absolutely agree with that. A lot of despondency, a lot of people feeling like the government has really drop the ball, I mean, in the most polite sort of way, on this particular issue, that there are so many political considerations that have come into the reckoning that really this has been handled particularly poorly. And it's so ironic. So many statements, so many things that happened yesterday were just supremely ironic. The fact that Litzman resigned, which we're still waiting the 48-hour period for the resignation to take effect, but it looks like it will ultimately take effect. And he's come out saying that the reason that he's resigning is because the lockdown has been imposed exactly now over the period of the Chagim, when he was proposing that this lockdown should have been done ages ago and that people should have been left to celebrate the Chagim in peace and with their families. That was his statement. Now, he has been opposing lockdown for the longest period of time, and his constituency have really been transgressing every possible measure that's been put in place, recommendation, a law that have been put in place in order to prevent this lockdown from happening. But ultimately, his constituency, in the most part, have been the ones who've transgressed this, and they are the ones who are more ill than any other local area group in Israel. Between the Arabs and the ultra-Orthodox communities, they are the ones who are showing most new infections than any other single group in Israel. And while the Arab leaders are very much looking to cooperate and to encourage people to cooperate with the government recommendations and to do whatever is taken, the same cannot be said of the Haredi leadership, unfortunately. And Litzman has been at the head of it because he himself has been seen to be transgressing rules and just simply driving roughshod over laws that have been put in place in order to prevent further infections. So that was really, really ironic. The other ironic thing that I found yesterday was the criticism of Professor Ronnie Gumzu, because again, he came under a lot of criticism for not having done things sooner, for not having, taken more control of things. And to be honest with you, I feel sorry for him because I think that he really did his best. He's really come up with some very, very suitable and very appropriate suggestions. He's tried to get these passed by the government. Unfortunately, he has been unsuccessful. So I don't think that he can be the person who really should be singled out for any blame where this is concerned.
But I don't think so. I think there's my sense of it is everybody that I've spoken to, there's such clarity that his hands have been completely tied by a very weak government.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. He has been prevented from doing his job. It's as really as simple as that. He was appointed by the government to do a particular job, and that same government has really prevented him from doing the job that he should have done. So as a result of all of that, it has now been decided that we will go into lockdown, which will take effect at 2 p.m. on Friday afternoon, Erev Rosh Hashanah, just before we go into the Chag, and it will last through Simchat Torah, which is on October the 9th. And during this lockdown period, the school system will remain closed except for special education and programs for at-risk youth. People will not be able to venture more than 500 meters from their homes. Restaurants, shopping centers, businesses that offer leisure and recreational activities will all be shut down. Work will be allowed as long as people and businesses adhere to the so-called Purple Ribbon Protocol, which has been established, which forces screens to be put up, people to maintain social distancing, a limit to the number of people that can be in an office at any one time. So similar to that, apparently the airport is due to stay open, and there will be a special outline for high holy day prayers. The whole issue of will the shuls be open or will the shuls not be open of Rosh Hashanah has not been finally resolved. Except that there is an indication at the moment that shuls probably will be open, but subject to certain limitations, certain restrictions, because this has also been a major point of contention where the religious community, the ultra-Orthodox community in particular, are saying that this is all about trying to interrupt their ability to celebrate Rosh Hashanah, to celebrate Yom Kippur and Sukkot. The truth of the matter is that perhaps a lockdown happening over the holiday period is exactly what's needed, because that's the time when people are most likely to get together in larger groups, family groups, whatever, to celebrate the holidays. And maybe this is a clear message that we need to go back to what was demanded of us at Pesach, which is that everybody celebrates Rosh Hashanah, everybody has their fast day, everybody does the holiday period on their own, in their own private homes, a sukkah for yourself at home, no large gatherings. I think perhaps this lockdown has potentially been timed in order to prevent massive gatherings of people as are traditional over this time of year to celebrate the Chagim as we would normally like to celebrate it and we're accustomed to celebrating. But this year, it's simply not appropriate to do so because people are really desperately ill. More than 4,000 new infections have now been diagnosed in a single day in Israel, a massive record. And I think it propels Israel to the top of the list in terms of the number of new infections per capita, not something that we can be proud of at all.
No, terrible. Really, really just, as I said, it's so disheartening considering how well Israel started off with us and now to be back in this situation and in fact significantly worse than before. You know, we were working out 3,000 new cases a day, was equivalent to 25,000 cases per capita, you know, in terms of South African numbers a day. 4,000 obviously much higher. It is a very, very disturbing number indeed. All right.
At
least there is some good news. The Prime Minister has flown to Washington to attend a peace ceremony that now includes Bahrain as well as the United Arab Emirates. So what was the reaction to Bahrain being included?
Well, I think that Bahrain's been on the cards for a while. We've spoken about it, and certainly the Saudi Arabians seem to be also in line to formalize diplomatic relations with Israel. And I think the fact that the United Arab Emirates took the leap and ultimately went that route, and the Bahrainis were able to see what the reaction was, both within the Arab world and indeed in the broader world, they were able to watch to see what might come their way if they decide to go down this route as well. So I think they had the benefit of that. Of course, some opposition from within Bahrain. There are many, the opposition from Bahrain was very, very critical. And of course, the usual cast of characters coming out being hugely critical about a peace agreement. But this is really a first time in history that I can remember that there's going to be a three-way peace treaty being signed and being commemorated, being celebrated at one ceremony, which is due to take place tomorrow in the White House. Israel signing peace accords with both the United Arab Emirates and with Bahrain all at once. Of course, Prime Minister Netanyahu was not going to miss the opportunity to be present at that ceremony. He boarded a flight yesterday and went to Washington in order to be part of that. The press, of course, had a field day presenting him as leaving the sick of Israel behind while he goes to enjoy the party at the White House. There is, of course, some truth to that.
Is that true? I mean, of course it's true, but is it fair? I mean, surely this is a massive step forward for Israel, making peace with two countries that they haven't had relationships with. Surely it's not fair criticism.
I think that this cannot be underestimated in its significance, not only in terms of the relationship that Israel is developing directly with Bahrain and with the United Arab Emirates, but also with what it means for Israel's relationship with the broader Arab world, and interestingly, what it means now for Israel's relationship with the Palestinian Authority, who, as we've said over a number of weeks, have felt very isolated and continue to feel isolated and have been very critical of Bahrain's a peace agreement with Israel. They are increasingly isolated now within the Arab world itself, which is a very fascinating situation for them to be in, and undesirable for them, because they are really being shown up as the ones who are really not prepared to take that step forward. But for the first time, Israel is entering into peace accords and developing diplomatic relations with countries that have been effectively at war with Israel and without diplomatic relations, but which do not border on Israel. And I think the fact that we don't have those land borders makes these agreements entirely different from the ones that we've managed to strike beforehand. But I think that this is a big step forward, and I think it is right that the Prime Minister should attend those ceremonies. It's unfortunate that the way that he's managed things at home have been such that people have been critical of him going to Washington to be present at the ceremony tomorrow.
Yeah, indeed. Very, very, very interesting. But it is reflective of how unhappy Israelis are that they can't really take a moment to enjoy this because there is such dissatisfaction with how government has been dealing with it. I mean, would be my interpretation of it.
I think that's very true. I think that people who are feeling dissatisfied at the moment are looking for every possible reason to criticize the government. And of course, the way that the Prime Minister handled his trip to Washington wasn't particularly good. He was going to charter a private plane in order not to have to travel with the whole entourage. He's taking his entire family with him. So there were question marks about whether his sons also need to be present at the peace signing ceremony. Ironically, the owners of that private flight, the private plane that he was going to hire, decided that they didn't want to be involved in any of this. They didn't want to be part of the smear campaign. And so they refused to hire out that plane to the prime ministerial entourage. As it turns out, he did travel on the Al flight last night with the rest of the entourage. So, you know, there's lots of reasons why people are trying to look to trip him up and to criticize him. And people are feeling sore at the moment. And so every opportunity will be gladly grabbed hold of as soon as people are able to do so.
Yep, and finally, we don't have a lot of time, but Israel has been accused once again of an attack carried out on Syrian targets near Aleppo. What's known about this attack?
Well, what we know is that this attack was carried out on Friday. We've seen pictures which show the structure that was destroyed. Apparently, entire structures were destroyed at this facility, which we're told was used for the production of missiles for Hezbollah. There were two main structures that were hit. One was believed to be housing explosives. The other was believed to be housing machines and equipment. There are satellite pictures that have been released which show the damage that was done to the site. So this is really what we know. This just goes alongside other production facilities nearby that were destroyed earlier in the year. So, you know, Israel's activities in Syria continue unabated in spite of everything that's happening on the home front. And of course, things that are not so good here, but at least we can continue to rely on our security forces to do all that they are able to do in order to keep us safe and sound at home as much as we can be. And of course, it's now up to us to try to do the same. Before I leave, and I know we're already at 8 o'clock, something, a little question to leave you guys with, which we can begin to talk about later in the week. But as we head into the High Holy Days, in Hebrew, we call them the Yamim Noraim, the Yamim Noraim. So listeners asked, why do we call the High Holy Days the days of awe? What's awe about them? Why do we describe them as that? So I'll just leave that as a thought, and I'm interested to hear if the listeners have views about that as well.
Absolutely great. So fantastic. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Wright, thank you. We'll catch you tomorrow morning, same time, same place, for the Israel Report.